And Richard Belzer, our special guest, as we talk about Hit List. Hey, by the way, happy birthday to Richard Hoagland. Gosh, I have no idea how old Richard is, but it's his birthday, so there you go, Richard. We'll be back in a moment as we talk about Hit List on Coast to Coast AM. And those of you calling now, we'll take your calls next hour with Richard Belzer. Richard, you're talking about the probability of these witnesses dying in the early stages of the JFK assassination, and a mathematician ran some numbers astronomical.
Well, the number I quoted was just after the first 18 months, but when you get into the, if you go on in time, in the 70s when they had the congressional hearings on assassination and other witnesses started dying, so it's, the number's even bigger. It's like, you know, it's a number you can't even, there's not that many zeros.
So,
so if there's, excuse me, George.
Go ahead.
If there is no conspiracy, why are all these people being murdered or dying mysteriously just before they're going to testify? Or they said something, you know, like one of Jack Ruby's employees was found hung in a jail cell because she, you know, saw Ruby with, you know what I mean? It's like, there's just too many. If it was just one or two people or three people, you know, people do die of natural causes and some people do get in freak accidents. But when you're getting up into these numbers and they're all related in some way to the assassination, then that has to set off alarm bells. That alone proves there's a conspiracy. I mean, we don't know every, and we know pretty now, we know who the plotters were. They're all dead, so we can name them. And, you know, the shooters, there may be a couple in jail that we know about. But, you know, there's no reason to keep this story away from the public anymore. Americans have seen a lot. They've been through a lot. They can handle it, and they have a right to know what happened. A man died that day. People seem to forget this, and they talk about conspiracy and revisions of history. And here's a man who wanted, he had the first nuclear test ban treaty with the Russians. He wanted to skim the oil depletion allowance because these right wing, not because they're right wing, but because they're making billions of dollars, and he wanted to have some of that money, tax them a little bit,
right,
put it in the Treasury. He wanted to end the Federal Reserve System and have Congress determine.
That could have been the big one.
Well, that's, some people think that alone. But also, you know, he had Martin Luther King in the White House. The first reports of after the murder, some people thought it was white racists that killed him. They hated him. The Cuban exiles, the mob, elements within the CIA, within the FBI, among the military elite,
we even
and
heard,
on and on and on. So once in a while, these people have a common interest, and they said, this guy's got to go. I mean, it wasn't the government as an institution, but the government as an institution had to cover it up.
There were even rumors that Aristotle Onassis wanted to do him in just so he could,
well, he hated
be
them,
out with but, Jackie, right?
Well, now, yeah, I mean, there's some, there, an interesting fact about Onassis is that a man who got money, a man who gave money to Sirhan Sirhan got money from Onassis.
That's strange.
Yeah, but that's another whole that's true, so, but it's a whole other.
So with these, what were they trying to cover up? The fact that these
in the murder?
Conspirators.
The, well, the thing is, what happened is the president is shot in broad daylight, right? Now, so people in the government who weren't in on it go, holy cow. You know, I'm sure they used other expletives,
yeah,
but they went, wait, oh, they did it, you know, because there was rumors floating around. There was even a unit that was sent to try and prevent it. I mean, this was,
oh really?
Yeah. So, but they,
well,
were,
they didn't do a good job.
Well, it's not their fault because, you know, this thing was, they were going to try to shoot him in Chicago, but they, we found out about it and they aborted it. They were going to shoot him in Florida, but they aborted it, but they got him in Dallas. Windows were open all over Dealey Plaza. You know, he was, we, you or I could have shot him that day. You know, I mean, it was wide open. The reason that, so the government, people in the government who weren't involved go, holy mackerel, what are we going to do? So they had to start covering it up out of institutional embarrassment. So people in the CIA who weren't in on it knew the guys in the CIA who were, and they had to help. And the, even, you know, like every department of the government had to, the press had to cover it up because they, you know, they thought they're being patriotic. I think initially a lot of people, for patriotic reasons, covered it up that it was a conspiracy because they didn't want you know, as I said before, the Russians or the Red Chinese to think, you know, that we're a banana republic.
And right, we're out of control.
That, I understand that, but it's 50 years now.
Yeah.
There's no reason, you know, because all the plotters are dead.
And most people
And we believe, know who they are.
And most people believe there was a conspiracy.
90% of the people in this country believe there was a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy. The other 10% work for the government or the media.
At the time, in 63,
yes, sir.
If they came public and said that rogue elements of government killed John F. Kennedy, do you think we could have had riots, that something dangerously disastrous would have happened?
That's a very good question. I do not think there would be riots. I think that, see, there's such, you know, the only thing you could think of is like Pearl Harbor, the death of FDR. I mean, what other precedent? You know what I mean? It's hard to know how people would have reacted. But I will say this. The Zapruder film was not shown to the American public for 13 years.
That's true.
If that film was seen the day after the murder, there'd be, you know, there would be outrage. There would be clearly, you know, back into the left, back into the left. Clearly, he was shot from the front unless Newtonian physics was suspended that day, you know, and clearly he was shot by more than one weapon because he had a tiny hole in his back, a tiny hole in his throat. And then his head explodes. That was a frangible bullet. It was a different type of weapon. And, you know, there's this big argument about how many shots were fired. Some people heard three shots and two were too close together to be from the Carcano. Some people may have heard four. You know, they're arguing about there could have been 20 shots if they had silencers. No one ever talks about that. I think I'm not bragging, but all these researchers, no one's ever thought of, yeah, there could have been silencers because we know that there was clearly more than one shooter.
Wasn't there later a House Select Committee which concluded that there was a conspiracy? Was a conspiracy.
Yeah, then they gavel, and no indictments were handed.
Nothing.
Well, that was the hearing where Roselli and Giancana were, all these people were being murdered. So the congressmen were scared out of their wits because every time they call someone to testify, they'd be whacked. And then they proved acoustically that, you know, there was, and they ruled there was a conspiracy and then gaveled it. And you hear nothing more about it. If there's a conspiracy, where are the indictments? Where's the Justice Department going further investigating? Because it would have uncovered this massive, massive thing that went throughout the government and would be incredibly humiliating for us in the world stage.
Do you think Hoover was part of it?
Hoover had foreknowledge of it, certainly, you know, was in on it. I think Johnson had foreknowledge. Some people have written books saying Johnson ordered it. I do not believe that. I believe he was told. And
before or after?
Before. I mean, there's a photograph of his car at the moment Kennedy shot, and he's nowhere to be seen, Johnson. He ducked. He didn't protect anyone else in the car. He didn't say anything. He just, because he knew.
Now, was he ducking before the shooting?
Well, some people, I don't know, but there are some people who say that he ducked just before that shot. Some people say he ducked in reaction to hearing the shot. So that's all right, but that doesn't matter. There's a million other things proving a conspiracy, but that's just a curious thing of, you know, where was Lyndon?
Yeah.
He was, you know, looking for his cufflink. I mean, really.
Heck, I would have thrown myself over my wife.
Exactly.
Wouldn't
and that's
you?
Yeah. Precisely as I did once in an earthquake, by the way, my to my wife, not yours. But like, for instance, in the president's car, the driver, the Secret Service agent in the passenger seat in the front should have dove over the seat onto the president, and they didn't. What does the driver do? He slows down. Some people say he stopped.
Right.
Some people say he definitely slowed down, and you see him turning, looking, watching the head explode, and then driving off. I mean, please, I've read the
and they're trained.
The Secret Service manual I read from that period, and it says if a shot is fired, you floor it. You get out of there. If your tires are shot out, you floor it. If you're, you know, you just instinctively are trained.
Go,
and the car should never be going 11 miles an hour. It should never make that big turn. Presidential cars are supposed to go 44 miles an hour. And if they're in a parade route, it's got to be straight line, and it's got to be windows shut everywhere. And there was an army unit that usually goes where the president goes to do backup. They were told to stand down.
And what about the Secret Service guys who were supposed to be running alongside the car. Weren't they told to kind of like get out of the way or something like that?
There's a very curious piece of footage of the director, the head of the Secret Service, who's in the follow-up car. There's an agent who was going over to the president's car to get on the running board and, you know, protect the president, and he's waved off. And this is on YouTube if you want to see it. And you see the agent with his hands out going like, what? He is perplexed. Why? You know. Now, I've been told the explanation for that is that some agents were supposed to just be in Houston and some in, you know, like it was, it's a very fishy explanation why he was waved off. But the only guy who sprung into action that day was Clint Hill, who Jackie Kennedy, Mrs. Kennedy, insisted that was her guy. He's the only one that reacted. Everybody, all the other guys didn't do anything because they knew what was going to happen.
Unbelievable.
It's heartbreaking.
We lost something that day, Richard.
Well, we lost a man who really wanted world peace, who really wanted integration, who really wanted, he did a speech about Social Security and how an elderly person, you know, in those days, if your son made a certain amount of money, the elderly parent couldn't get benefits.
I didn't know that.
Kennedy wanted Change that. Is this not fair to a son who is working and has a family to have to be responsible for his parent who may need, you know, he was about helping the disenfranchised while still being, you know, a free enterprise. You know, you can do that. This obsession with, you know, everyone's an entrepreneur and it's all about business. And no, I mean, most people in this country don't own their own business. But, you know, if Mussolini defined fascism as corporatism, in other words, the government is for the corporation, not the individual. And the technical definition of fascism is, I dare say, what's at work in our government right now.
Yeah.
Every Supreme Court decision since this Roberts Court with Scalia and Clarence and these other people, every decision when there's a corporation against an individual, the corporation wins. If there's a landlord against a tenant,
all the time,
the landlord wins. It's just unbelievable how the Supreme Court has become politicized, which it clearly wasn't supposed to be. It's supposed to be checks and balances. But look, they threw the election for George Bush the first time. I mean, people say, you know, he won the election. Yeah, by 5-4. You know. Since when does the Supreme Court interfere and stop people from voting? And, you know, in that ruling, by the way, George, it says this is a first time in the history of the Supreme Court that the language of the law was clearly stating this is just for this election.
Right, right. I mean, there's no precedent.
How fishy can you be?
Strange. Well, when you were doing the work with David Wayne.
Yes, brilliant man.
What was the main fact, if any, that just shocked the heck out of you?
Well, the arrogance and there's a lot of things, but the thing that is interesting to us is that in the early 60s when this happened, and then in the 70s when they had the committees reexamining at the Church Committee and the assassination, the review and everything, what happened was, just the amount of information that came out, when any, like a smart high school kid, if he just looked at it all, would say, of course, it's incontestable. All the people on the committee, the congressional committee investigating the assassination of Kennedy and King in the 70s, every single person just knew there was a conspiracy. I mean, Gaetan Fonzi, who was an investigator, we lost him this year, by the way, a huge loss. He wrote the greatest book ever on the assassination. It's called The Last Investigation, and it was about the House Select Committee on Assassinations. He was an investigator who had the evidence. He saw it all.
He
went into Arlen Specter's office with a sport jacket and put it on the desk and said, show me how, because, you know, when Kennedy was shot, the bullet went 5 3/8 or 5 3/4 inches down from the neck. Okay. The Warren Commission said it was in his neck.
Mm-hmm.
All right. No, It was way below there. The death certificate signed by Dr. Berkeley, who is Kennedy's physician, places the wound at the spot where it really was, where it was in the jacket. Now, here's what's interesting. This is another thing that proves something. The jacket and the shirt that Kennedy was wearing have a hole in the exact same spot. Now, three things. One, Kennedy was one of the most well-tailored presidents. He didn't buy suits off the rack.
That's right.
Two, he had a back brace on. So that shirt was tight. Mm-hmm. That jacket was tight. And they say, oh, he was waving or turning and the jacket bunched up. It would have had to have bunched up like, you know, like and go above up. His neck and go like this and be like that. There's no photographs. You know, that's physically impossible for that to happen. If it did happen, there'd be two holes in the jacket and two holes in the shirt, and they wouldn't be lined up if it doubled over. So right there, you know that there was more than one shooter and that Oswald didn't shoot. And one day I was interviewing a Time magazine reporter about a book he wrote about comedy at the 92nd Street Y in Manhattan. And as I'm coming into my event, who comes walking out of another event? Arlen Specter. There he was. And I just went over to attack him.
Yeah.
I said, I'll give you $1 million.
Did he know who you were?
He didn't act like he did, but you never
who
know.
Knows?
You right. never know. I don't care. I said, I'll give you $1 million if you can explain to me. No, at first I said, you remember Gaetan Fonseca? Oh, yes, my investigator. I said, do you remember when he came into your office? And, you know, and he's like, he really was like.
He kind of recoiled.
He became
right?
Ralph Crandon. Hamana, 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 hamana.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was astounded that I would be so.
Bold?
I was very bold, but I was very respectful. I mean, there was a Time reporter there. Robert Klein, the comedian, was there. He was trying to pull me off,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I just said, I'll give you $1 million. If you can show me how you determined that the bullet went through without causing more than one hole if the jacket did, in fact, bunch up. And he was like, he could not believe that someone would do that to him.
After
it was like this
years,
this kind of, you know, I don't want to say arrogance, but it was like, how dare, who is this, you know, like, and then he said, his wife's ill and he had to go and his aide kind of, but.
And they ran away from you.
He did run away from me. Maybe his wife was. I said, you know, I'm so sorry to hear that, Senator, and I hope your wife feels better. And I certainly hope that you think about what I said.
Please.
But he won't, and he didn't. And, you know, he was ordered by Dulles to come up with this single bullet theory because the first shot missed. And if you have, how do you miss a giant car? The first shot was a signal to the other shooters. It hit the curb and hit James Tague in the cheek, had blood. So they said, oh, now we only have two bullets left. And then we have a photograph of another person finding a whole bullet in the ground, not the one that hit Tague. There's another whole bullet. And we have photos of a guy picking it up, and that disappeared. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah,
it's all there. And finally, the reason I wrote this book about the witnesses dying mysteriously is because it proves, to use a legal term, beyond a shadow of a doubt, beyond reasonable doubt, that there was a conspiracy to murder the president. Otherwise, there would be no reason, rhyme or reason for all these people to have died in and around key events related to the assassination.
And I was going to say, the witnesses who all died,
yes,
did they see something so out of the ordinary that they could have destroyed the theory?
Well, I mean, Walter Sullivan, head of the FBI, was just talking. You know, he was overheard by several people talking a little bit too much. You know, Dan Rather didn't. No reporter saw the assassination, but they appropriated Tom Wicker, Dan Rather. They appropriated the story, but they haven't investigated it in 50 years.
We're going to come back with more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now, you know, every Wednesday, a Coast to Coast listener gets to sound off, gets to tell us how they feel about the major issues of the day. You can do that, too. Send us an editorial at editorial@coasttocoastam.com. Make it about a minute's worth. Write it out. Put your name and phone number there. And Tommy will give you a call, possibly, and we'll record you.
This is Mark from Florida, and this is my sound off. I was thinking one day about all the suffering and injustice occurring in the world, and how could I possibly help? Inspired by Coast to Coast, I thought about mass consciousness and the effect it can have on positive outcomes. Most of us have heard or seen examples of mass consciousness and the power of prayer in varying degrees. What if people of goodwill could join their minds together to affect positive outcomes and alleviate suffering and pain? Motivated by this possibility, I put together a simple web page where I post an intention and a request for all inclined to do so to join their minds together in thought with the intention of a positive outcome for all involved. The goal is simple: to help reduce suffering and help make the world a better place. And I believe if enough people put their minds to it, we can make it happen. If you care to join me, please go to massconsciousness.org. This is Mark from Florida, and this has been my sound off.
Okay, next hour will be the magical hour. We'll take your phone calls with Richard Belzer. We talk about conspiracies and his latest work, Hitless. The book's out, and I'm holding it right now. Can people get it?
Hitless is available everywhere. It's in the history section, which I'm very proud of. It's not being marginalized, but you can get it on Amazon or from Alex Jones's InfoWars. He's been kind enough to sell the book, as well as anywhere books are available.
You signed mine, so I might put Barnes it on eBay and
you
make
can
some
get,
money.
Yeah, you get $2 extra for it.
Rich, I want to talk with you about UFOs, but
sure.
Before we do, I want you to wrap up this work, Hitless. What does this tell us about the direction we're going? And are we salvageable as a people?
I believe, I'm a cynical optimist, I guess. I believe that knowledge is power. And as our founders, with all their faults, did have some brilliant insights into an informed citizenry. That was very important to people like Adams and Jefferson about that the public should be informed and have knowledge, and that way they could choose their leaders. Now, you know, it's like almost a joke how the same people get reelected, and mm-hmm. You know, a senator from a state with, you know, three people in it has the same power as a senator from New York or California. It's insane. You know, a lot of these people who are senators in states where they only need to get, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 votes to win, they are determining the lives of the other 310 million people in
That's
America.
Good point.
John Kennedy made, I listened to all his speeches. And in one of his speeches, which blew my mind because it's so topical, he said, President Truman said that there's about 14 million people in America who are represented in Washington, you know, by lobbyists or whatever. And John Kennedy said, I represent the other 200 and whatever, the other 250 million people. In other words, he said, you know, people want the president just to be a ceremonial head. And then get yourself another president. I'm here to represent, you know, it was an amazing speech, just calling out.
He was phenomenal.
Calling out the other side. But, you know, I'm respecting him more and more as I learn more and more about what he was up against on the inside, how he was lied to by generals and how they tried to sabotage things and embarrass him and float false rumors. And, you know, but he got it. You know, he grew in office pretty quickly. You know, in 1,000 days, he went from, you know, the naive, rich, well-meaning guy to a really hard-nosed, brilliant geopolitical thinker.
Why aren't we trading with Cuba? We trade with communist China that has run over people with tanks.
Yeah, we contained the Soviet Union. We contained China. And yet we are, you know, embargoing
Cuba. I don't understand. You can't get a Cuban cigar. Not that I smoke.
Well, John got them. And Milton Berle gave me one.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I was at the car.
But, I mean, it's ludicrous, isn't it?
Well, it's so ludicrous that I really have yet to hear a reasonable explanation how and why this keeps going.
And nobody brings it up.
And it's so unfair. I have Cuban friends who... whose family, who, you know, nice people who happen to be successful. Not every rich person's bad.
Right. And they're successful where? Here?
No, in Cuba.
In Cuba.
And they had to flee because they, you know, Castro was taking, right. You know. So, I mean, the thing about Cuba is totally mystifying to me.
Castro changed.
Totally, I mean, mystifying.
This is what happened, as you know. Batista was a criminal.
Oh, yeah. He was.
He was killing people.
Well, he was,
you know, he allowed crooks.
Gun running.
And the mob.
That's what Ruby was involved.
He was getting paid by the mob. For
yeah.
The casino.
No,
he was bad. So getting him out, Castro's revolution, the people just loved Castro.
Right.
And Guevara.
Right.
I mean, they wanted this to happen.
Right.
But apparently the supporters of Castro, those people who ended up leaving Cuba, fleeing, going to Miami, they realized that as soon...
You mean the supporters of Batista?
No, they...
Oh, Castro.
They were, those who were supporting Castro ended up leaving, too.
Oh, fleeing, yes, because of him.
Because he started taking over companies and land and worked out things with the Soviets.
We had a moment
They got out of there. We lost that moment.
The Soviets offered to pay all his bills.
Yeah. We lost that split second where he flipped. But, I mean, he brought Cuba education, free medicine. He did some incredible things when he came in.
Yeah, but a lot of women in Cuba are forced into prostitution, women who would not normally do it.
Because of him?
Because of the economic conditions there. And they have political prisoners there. And there's dark stuff going on.
I mean, is he even aware of what's going on?
Well, he was up until very recently. I mean, Castro is one of those, you know, brilliant, evil people who managed to survive all this time for some who knows what reason. I mean,
so evil,
we could blow somebody out of a chair from a helicopter, you know what I mean, if we wanted to.
If we wanted to.
And they did try to kill him.
Many times.
And it's funny because there was talk of creating a holographic, this is true, a holographic 300-foot Christ to appear in Cuba and have the people, you know, turn against Castro.
Yeah.
They were going to put
poison him
in a conch shell that would explode when he went scuba diving.
Yeah.
He put LSD on his scuba gear. There was a woman who was hired to kill him, who was one of his mistresses, and one day he's in bed with his hands behind his back, you know, like this, and he goes, they sent you to kill me, right?
Oh, he knew?
He knew, and she was, like, busted.
That was it.
And he didn't kill her.
Had her thrown out, though, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, but
eventually.
I'm just saying he was no dummy.
No.
And he certainly wasn't.
He can't be a dummy.
Certainly didn't kill President Kennedy, which some people say, oh, Castro. Castro wanted, as a matter of fact, the day the president was murdered, there was a Swiss diplomat in Cuba trying to smooth things out because Kennedy wanted that over. He wanted that over. He wanted to get out of Vietnam. I mean, he wanted to do all the things that Eisenhower warned us. Kennedy realized what Eisenhower was saying about the military-industrial complex. Key word in that speech, by the way, which a lot of people, you know, a lot of people quote that line, the military-industrial complex. But if you read the whole speech, President Eisenhower also said it could affect us spiritually.
That's right. He used that word.
For him to use that word, you know, a soldier who served World War II, he was scared.
Yeah.
Because they sabotaged, you know, they sabotaged the U-2 flight so that Khrushchev and Eisenhower couldn't. Eisenhower wanted to go out of his presidency as a world peacemaker. So, and Khrushchev did too. So they're going to meet in England with Macmillan and have this world summit. Crowning achievement of Eisenhower's career, he tells the Pentagon, stand down all U-2 flights. Mm-hmm. And a U-2 flight was...
And Gary Powers gets nailed.
Yeah,
right?
So, but then they asked Dulles at a Senate hearing how the president, the commander-in-chief, gave an order. Who can overrule the president? So Dulles says, we had a group. And there was no follow-up question.
No, there was no group. It was Dulles.
We had a group.
Dulles was...
No, there is a group. It's a National Security Agency. Presidents are part-time workers. There is a group. Presidents can only do so much.
That's still the case.
Yeah, well,
it's
still every president since Kennedy probably take him in.
Alex Jones calls them all puppets.
They're puppets and part-time workers. Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. Right, yeah. UFOs. How'd you get interested in that?
Well, every kid. You know, I grew up in the I'm old. You know, the late 40s, early 50s. UFOs, and people don't, I don't know if people know this, but there was an incredible amount of UFO sightings on film fired upon. This is on record. I mean, they were over the White House in 1952. Yeah, a squadron that we, you know, and actually during World War II, there was a UFO that we shot at. And anyway, so there was a flap, what we call flaps, after Kenneth Arnold, the famous person who used the term, the press called, used the term flying saucer at the time, because he said he saw these things that looked like saucers. But since then, there's been so much that has happened. We're in 2013 now, and I'm beginning to, well, I'm not beginning. This is what I believe. I was fortunate enough to meet Alan J. Hynek, who at first was hired as a debunker and would go to witnesses and, you know, and, oh, that was swamp gas or that was this or that. And then he got bitten in the rear end by his conscience and became one of the foremost guys, started in his own foundation to investigate this phenomenon, because it wasn't, you know, what they wanted us to believe. And I interviewed him on a, I was on morning television. I was guest hosting on a TV show in the 70s. And
did we have TV then?
Yeah. Well, it was cranked. It was cranked up. And so I got, they said, who do you want to have on? So, you know, Alan J. Hynek. And he came. And I interviewed him on the air, and then I took him out after for lunch. And I, you know, was sitting right next to him. I said, here he is, you know. It's like, I was like, Dr. Hynek, what do you really believe? What is it? You know, that's, you're like me. You want to,
you want the answer.
You could talk to somebody for hours, but we know how to cut to the chase at some point. And he said, he did a very interesting thing. He reached in his pocket and took out a little portable radio, and he turned it on. And he said, you don't see those radio signals, but they're here.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking then about, they're not necessarily from distant planets. They are, and in physics we know now, about parallel reality. In other words, you can, there are things that occupy the same space as us. So when you see a UFO, and some people say it went out like a light, it's just going in, back into its dimension. Yeah. They have learned to, whoever they are, to go interdimensionally, which we have yet
to
learn, or we may have the technology.
We will one day.
But we're not telling, no, we may have it now, but
that's,
we're not.
True.
The Pentagon has stuff 10 years ahead of,
yeah,
before they tell anybody, and they always weaponize things. You know Ingo Swann, of course.
The late great Ingo Swann,
who was a natural psychic, who was hired by the military to teach remote viewing. And when he realized they were going to weaponize it, he left. And I asked him once about Mars and about the moon, and the only thing he would say about, because I learned as a newspaper reporter, if you're with someone and they drink, let them drink a little, then then ask them a question. So he was a little, you know, drinking, I mean, he knew me, and he knew my, we had mutual friends. So I went over to him and I said, Ingo, what about, at first I said, Dallas. He said, I wouldn't touch that snake pit. You know, he didn't want to even talk
that
about
that gave
it.
You the answer right
Dallas.
There.
I wouldn't put my feet in that snake pit.
Yeah.
And then I said, Mars. He said, slave labor, which was very interesting because there's some, not crazy, but, you know, researchers who feel that there's, well, we know that there's mining on the moon. We know that. We've seen footage of, you know, lights going in one crater and out the, I mean, this is in the public domain.
Of course, who's doing the mining?
There's, well, not us.
Yeah.
Some people think, you know, why, they said, why didn't we go back to the moon? You could, you know, in zero gravity, you could work on medicines and get mineral. I mean, the moon would be a great place, right? We went there, what, 8 times or something and never went back? Some people think we were warned off.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here.
You think we were?
I don't know. But I know that astronauts have said on record, Edgar Mitchell and other astronauts, they saw things on the moon. They had code words for it. There's Santa Claus, or, you know, we're being visited. And there's footage. You know, there was a guy in the 70s, I can't think of his name, but for a while, NASA's feeds were not edited. and a period in time. And there was one guy, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. I'm sure one of your callers will know what I'm talking about. He VHS'd every single feed from NASA, hundreds of hours of tape. And they're on the web, and you see like the space station's there, and all of a sudden this thing goes by. And then you see, you know what I mean? It's like, it's all there. One time a tether broke from the space station, just 100 mile long, or not 100 mile, but a huge tether that you could see. And then all of a sudden all these objects come around it and are going behind it, and they're talking about it. You hear the NASA talking about it, and not, but there was like hundreds of UFOs right there in NASA footage. So clearly there's something going on. I believe that they're not from distant planets. I think there may be some from distant planets, but the solving of the problem of traveling vast distances is solved if you can travel interdimensionally. So that would explain. And I do believe that there's some very fishy things about our evolution, DNA. Darwin's theory takes a lot of winks and nods. You have to believe that, oh, at this point there was this weird there was a weird mutation. You know, there's right. These jumps there that he can't explain. And when Darwin came up with his theory at that time, there were other people that were trying to find the origin of the species too. And his theory just got marketed, and that became the canon. But
he knew how to promote.
But you know, Michael Cremo and Hidden
Forbidden Archaeology.
Forbidden Archaeology, where they found tools that are 400,000 years. I mean, this Earth, whether it's aliens or not, we had highly evolved civilizations on this planet in our deep past. Graham Hancock has proved that. Other very sober, responsible researchers have proved that there was technology on this planet that, according to the straight or the, you know, establishment scientists, the people at that time couldn't have done it. They had no written language. How could they build these? You know what I mean? So clearly there was some very high evolution going on hundreds of thousands of years ago on this planet.
Well, how about the ancient Indian texts and readings talking about
the Mahabharata?
Yeah, flying all over the place.
You know what's interesting about the Mahabharata is the specificity of the descriptions of the ships and the battles.
Yes.
And it's more than, you know, they say, oh, those are myths, but you know, it's beyond myth. When ancient China, ancient India, the Assyrians, these different cultures that had no knowledge of each other, describing those who came from above that had the technology.
And they're all similar.
Yeah. It's a common thing that's beyond coincidence.
Would you be one of those to go to Mars?
I wouldn't. If I saw a UFO, I would run as fast as I could away from it.
You would?
Oh, I'd be terrified.
Why?
Because they could be Nazis. Maybe they are doing these experiments.
Maybe.
Who knows? Maybe they did make a deal, as some people feel, and they said, look, we can wipe your planet away, or we'll give you a little technology and let us do whatever we want.
And just get out of
our
way.
That's, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's definitely plausible. And when you hear these abduction stories from people like John Mack from Harvard, who was ostracized and vilified, this was a very serious scientist who interviewed hundreds of people who said they were abducted. And he said something happened to these people. You know, they're not all crazy.
That's right. Don't know what, but
you know,
something happened.
When you have different cultures with no knowledge of each other having the same experience over decades, this is, you know, then either there's this bizarre psychological condition that we should investigate.
Right.
Or they're being abducted. There's no in between.
And Mac dies from a drunk driver in London.
Who?
John Mack.
I know.
Stepping off a curb.
I know.
A drunk driver.
Yeah.
Convenient.
Allegedly.
Isn't it?
He was a really important
guy.
You
can put him into one of these chapters.
Yeah, that's another book.
It never ends. Well, Richard, stay with us. We're going to come back. Final hour to go with Richard Belzer. We will take your phone calls. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So those of you who have been waiting, we'll get to you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.